Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. I'm your host, Zach, and this week I'm once again joined by my friend Lance. What's up, Lance?
What's up? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great.
Just want to thank everybody for listening to the first episode. We got some really good response from everybody on Facebook, Twitter. You know, not so much on Twitter, but a lot but friends, you know, friends on Facebook, and then also just friends in real life. So shout out to all you guys. You know who you are. If you are listening, please add us on Twitter. I would like to get over 20 followers within the next couple weeks. The Facebook page has been great. The Facebook page has really taken off. But the for whatever reason, the Twitter, maybe a lot of people don't have Twitter and have Facebook. These days, you're never really sure. It's like
you're really not, because there's so many different platforms. Like, you know, people have all sorts of different things. Instagram, which I don't have. Snapchat. Who knows what else people have? So you never know.
Yeah, we don't have an Instagram, but I think our friend Nick Ryan Magdoza, who is responsible for that awesome artwork we have for the show. So thank you.
Shout to Nick.
He'll be on the next episode, by the way. So you'll get to hear from him on the fresh episode, in the next fresh episode of Smallville. We'll talk about that with Nick. He's big into Instagram, so I might put him in charge of our Instagram department, because I'm not about that life.
Nope.
I have one just to stalk people, but that's another story. Speaking of stalking,
this is a great episode
a great episode. Stalking etiquette will be part of our discussion in this episode, Metamorphosis. Now, obviously, this is the second episode of Smallville, and it really serves as the second half of
a
two-part pilot. And interesting to note that in Canada, they released a home video release of the pilot and Metamorphosis. Say that three times fast.
Metamorphosis.
Easier said than done? No, because doing is saying in that respect. But anyway, the Metamorphosis is the second episode. And in
in Canada, they released a home video of the pilot and Metamorphosis.
Thank you,
together.
Lance. Thank you for that. Really, tell me more, Lance. And they edit it together like a feature length episode, and I think it works really well, because the transition is it kind of at the end of the pilot. Remember, it pans up to the sky, to the stars, and then, you know, everything, you're everything, and then it pans back down into over to Lana's house, like from the stars. And I think that's a really good transition. If you didn't know, you'd think that it really was created that way. So kudos to the creators. That's a really interesting way to watch it, and I almost wish they would release that version with the DVD box sets and the on iTunes, because that's a really, it feels like a more complete beginning to the story of Smallville. Because as we were talking about in our last episode, you know, there's a lot of characters that are kind of left hanging in the pilot. Like Martha's last scene is just her nodding to Jonathan. I didn't realize this until I posted this YouTube video of the original Martha Kent, all her scenes, Cynthia Ettinger. And that's when I realized, oh, wow, you know, Martha's not really in the pilot that much. Mm-hmm. And her last scene is her, shrugging or nodding or gesturing to Jonathan to tell Clark he's an alien. And then Lex, you know, he's left in the cornfield. He finds the kryptonite necklace, and that's all we hear from him. So, I mean, these are major characters that are just kind of left out there in the pilot. So it's interesting to see them carry on a lot of the story threads. As we were joking about Smallville's continuity, how it has good continuity, this episode really does have great continuity from the pilot. Speaking of continuity, Clark, Tom Welling got a haircut after the pilot, because he's kind of a hair god in the pilot. The way TV shows work is they usually shoot the pilot, and then they wait to get approval to go to series or not. So that's why a lot of pilots have lots of different elements to them. The sets aren't quite the same a lot of the times. Any show, you can usually identify the pilot from when the series starts proper. There's a lot of just practical changes and logistic changes. And one of those things, I mean, we were joking about it, but Whitney's letter jacket changes.
Yep.
In the original pilot, it kind of has a shield behind it, and maybe people thought, okay, that's a little too Superman. People are going to figure out where Clark Kent got this logo from. Which is actually an evolving thing throughout the course of the show. You might notice that, oh, cool, he took this and that and made his... No, he didn't. It's just from Krypton. But that's Superman Returns and Bryan Singer's fault. And we'll get to that when we get to season 5. You know, obviously the Smallville crow is the mascot. He's running around with a red cape. You know, he has the S on his chest. So you think, oh, cool, Clark incorporated that and mixed it with his Kryptonian 8, which is the S, the House of L symbol, mm-hmm. and made Superman. And that's great because it shows, you know, the combination of two worlds, and that's what he is, and that's really cool. And
no, then, that's thinking too way too deep into it.
Well,
that's not exactly
that was what Smallville was going to do until the movie department said, no, you have to make your universe line up with Superman Returns, which lines up with the 1970s movies.
Yep.
Which is just a conversation for another time, and that time will come around season 5, as I said. So, Whitney's letter jacket changes. We were joking about the barn, as Clark calls it, his Fortress of Solitude, a joke that's ruined by him actually having a Fortress of Solitude on the show later, again, season 5. Thank you, Brian Singer. He should have made X-Men 3, man.
It's true.
Of course, he did make X-Men 3 a couple years ago. It's called Days of Future Past.
Indeed.
There are other things that, you know, just little things, little aesthetic things where they hadn't quite, you know, found exactly what they were going to do with the show. So those all get tightened up. And usually it's not a big deal, but because this happens the next day, it does create some interesting continuity problems that you just let go and just accept. Because
yeah, it's just it's kind of whatever at that point.
But the point being, I guess, when I started this whole side note, Tom Welling got a haircut, and he had to get hair extensions between filming the pilot and filming Metamorphosis so his hair matched. So they called it like a $2 million haircut or something. I don't know how long or how expensive those hair extensions are, but I know Tom Welling joked about that. So those were some little things that changed between this and the pilot. But you know, overall, I think it flows very well. And like I said, this is the first episode I actually saw parts of. So it's my first exposure to the show. So this episode kind of has a special place in my heart.
There you go.
All right. Well, with that said, let's jump into Metamorphosis.
Let's do it.
Anna.
Your mom said I could wait up here. Hope you don't mind. This is an amazing place.
My dad built it. He calls it my Fortress of Solitude.
Metamorphosis is the second episode of Smallville's first season. It aired on October 23rd, 2001. It's directed by Michael Watkins and Philip Scrigsia. Not sure. Also interesting, it's directed by two people. I looked that up and really couldn't find why.
Yeah, so, I was about to ask, like, why that would happen.
That's an odd thing for television. Usually that implies someone got fired or someone had to do reshoots. And, I mean, the pilot had reshoots. But this one did not, so I'm really not sure why they had two directors. Sorry, guys. I know we're supposed to be the information source here, but my search results came up empty on that one. Then, of course, it was written by Alfred Gow and Miles Miller, who also wrote the pilot and were the executive producers of the show who developed it for television. So this episode starts with Lana Lang. She's returned home from the homecoming dance, the Enchantment on the Sea dance. And... And she has gone to a room, and there's a box. There's a gift, and she opens it up, and they're butterflies, which just creeped me the hell out.
Yes, it
would. Like, oh, butterflies! Like, for some reason, that's a romantic thing.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, this episode really starts and sets the precedent for creepiness and really poor behavior from the citizens of Smallville, the male citizens of Smallville,
the freaks of the week. Yeah, because Lana Lang is like everybody's, you know, dream girl. Yeah, apparently, you know, so. It's a cool transition because we meet our freak of the week. It's Greg Arkin, and he Bug Boy is his name. And you know, people always used to call him Bug Boy, like, you know, on forums and whatever Smallville conversation. I thought, look, it's not his name. Why are you giving him names? He's freak of the week. Don't have names. Yeah. Actually, he does have a name. Whitney calls him that in the episode.
He does.
So like, oh, okay, that's actually not bad. He's hanging out in a tree and he's, you know, videotaping Lana opening his present.
Yeah,
I guess she probably thinks they're from Whitney.
Well, of course she does. Who else is she going to think they're from?
I don't know. Every freak in Smallville who has a crush on her, you know.
Well, see, this is the start of the precedent. Like, you know, if this was like a few episodes down the road, then yeah. But at this point, she probably just thinks it's from Whitney.
Right. Just, like everything positive Clark does for her, Whitney gets credit for. But
that's correct.
We'll get into that later. But that's how it works, guys. So he's played by Chad E. Donella. He's not really a famous actor or anything, but he's a familiar face.
Yeah.
You've seen him in commercials. Yeah. I remember the first commercial I saw him in was a Taco Bell commercial. Back in the early 2000s. It was some like, hey, we're open all night, and he's in his car going to Taco Bell eating a taco or something.
Yep.
And more recently you've seen him in all the Star Wars The Force Awakens commercials.
Yeah.
I think is it Target?
I can't remember.
See, bad commercial because you can't remember the brand.
Yeah,
like so many Super Bowls this past week, and that's the thing with these Super Bowl commercials. that's cool if you remember the content, but if you don't remember what the product is, it's a waste.
It is a waste.
Because you're not going to go buy the point of advertisement is for you to go buy the product they're advertising.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go buy Mountain Dew because you're freak baby.
God, that was awful.
Dog, monkey. And besides, who drinks Mountain Dew? I've never drank. Have you ever had a Mountain Dew?
Yeah.
I've never had a Mountain Dew in my life.
That doesn't surprise me.
Nor have I had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So
yep.
I'm going to take that to the grave. Maybe that, right. You know, if I ever get on death row, maybe that's what I should make my last meal. Peanut butter, jelly sandwich, and Mountain Dew. What a dark place. I took that. But anyway.
No joke. Wow.
So Chad E. Donnelly, he's just in a lot of commercials. And he was actually, he was in Taken 3. He's the cop who's driving the car that Liam Neeson is in the back of.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I was like, that's Bug Boy. And he is one of the rare Freak of the Week that makes a return appearance.
He does.
He shows up in one of the best episodes of the whole series.
Homecoming.
In season 10. So that's him. He's our Freak of the Week. He's our antagonist of this episode. This is rather a long cold open for the show. It kind of goes on for a while.
It does.
So you see him go home.
You kind of forget you're watching Smallville.
Yeah. He goes home and his mom is watching all of his tapes that he has been, obviously he's been stalking Lana for a while. He's compiling these tapes and his mom has found them and she's watching it. And I'm like, you know what? This mom is the best mom in Smallville.
Like, exactly.
She's
like,
not messing around.
Yeah, again, shout to the parents and, like, you know, for the show, for recognizing that parents have a role in people's lives. Like, because that's some real world stuff. You get caught by your mom doing something you're not supposed to.
And he's like, you had no right to go in my room. She's like, you have a lot of nerve to talk to me about privacy. I was like, yeah, you go, mom. And he's like, oh, my bugs. And she says, two disgusting habits. So I was like, yes. Yes, mom is on point. Like,
yes.
Yeah, you tell him. So she threatens. She's like, look, on Monday, because this is a Saturday night, because it's the same night as the homecoming game.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, first thing on Monday morning, I'm calling the, you know, military school, and you're going. And I meet it this time. So obviously this has been a conversation. He's like, yeah, whatever, mom. She's like, no, I meet it this time.
He's so like, what are you going to do with my bugs?
Yeah, he's my bug collection, man. So he goes through his. It is a disgusting habit. Mom is correct. Because, my God, have you ever known anyone who's collected bugs?
No.
Yes, because it is a disgusting habit. I mean, what do you get out of that? You know, like, bugs are disgusting. Like, you want to look at them. Like, usually people want to get them out of the room. This guy has them, like, in jars and ant farms and all kinds of gross stuff. You know, the setup here for him becoming Bug Boy makes a lot of sense because his mom's like, okay, on Monday I'm going to call the military school and send you off. So he decides, look, I'm going to run away from home. So he goes up to his room, and you notice all the posters on his wall?
Yeah, I did. It's hilarious.
Like Papa Roach.
Uh-huh. That was the one that really made me laugh, was the Papa Roach poster. I was like, of course you have this in here.
So kudos to the art directors for that. It's very funny. So he collects all those bugs. He collects his collection, puts them in his, of course he drives a Volkswagen Beetle.
Uh-huh.
And the original one, too. Because this is the early 2000s when those things were still viable to drive.
That's
around.
True.
But anyway, he's driving a Volkswagen Beetle. And then, of course, he's driving on a bumpy road, and then some of the bugs get loose. And we see that their kryptonite is in, you know, these containers. Obviously, he's collected some bugs with some meteor rocks, and they are glowing green themselves, so they have obviously been affected by the meteorites, the kryptonite. They start swarming at him and bite him, and, you know, he freaks out, and the car crashes into a ditch. And there's a shot with, like, them panning back from the car, and you see him like, oh, oh!
Yep.
I got a real Jurassic Park vibe from that, when Nedry gets killed by the Dilophosaurus.
Yeah.
Such a great scream. Jerry!
Jerry! Ah! It's just like that episode where, like, his car gets on fire.
Yes, it's so dry. I wonder if that came before or after Jurassic Park.
I'm going to have to look that up.
I mean, that's crazy. Jurassic Park was in the height of Seinfeld's popularity.
It was.
And I'm thinking, okay, all right, here come the opening credits. No, we have a whole nother scene.
I know.
Where the mom comes home, and I guess it's in the morning, and the house is like 90 degrees. Because
yeah, but she's like, what the hell?
So he's a bug now. She's like, Craig, what has gotten into you? He's like, you know what the fill-in-the-blank spider does when it's born? Kills its mother. And like, whoa! And then he, like, you know, he spits web towards
whatever
the screen.
Whatever it was at her.
And then we get, somebody save me! This is the first instance of the opening credits. You know, as you heard in our show, that's how the show starts off. Hopefully, Remy Zero will not sue us, but they're not a band anymore.
It's true.
Interesting, Smallville lasted for 10 years. That was long enough for Remy Zero to break up, get back together, and break up again.
Mm-hmm. But you know, this song is so good, though.
It's perfect for the show.
It's the
right?
perfect song for this show. It's like, it's so great. Like, I loved the theme song. Watch, like, that was part of the But one of the things that really, like, endeared me to this show was the theme song. Well, A Lost Art.
It got you into the mood to watch Smallville. Like, yes. Even when the lame cold opens, you're like, ugh. And there's like, da-da-da-da, somebody say. And you're like, all right, I'm on board. They picked the right song. Because you look at another show like Enterprise, right? Which came out in 2001. And their song, they also picked a, quote, pop song, unquote.
Worst theme song. Or choice of song for a theme song ever.
It's been a long road.
It's terrible.
Getting from there to here. It's like, all right, snooze. Didn't even put Star Trek in the title until the third season when they needed the ratings. So shame on you, Enterprise. But it's crazy. Enterprise and Smallville came out the same year.
Ugh.
Anyway, so, you know, we see a lot of clips from obviously the pilot and then this episode, Metamorphosis. Also from Jitters, which was the third episode produced, but it got pushed back in the production run. So we see some shots of that. And then a few clips from Hothead, which is the next episode. So, and those are the clips we see for the full first season. In opening credits are a lost art form because you look at shows today. Like you're lucky, even a show like Arrow or The Flash, you at least get like a title screen.
Yeah, you get the title screen of the show. That's it. But
some shows don't even give you that.
Nope.
You know, so it's like it's a lost. Do you really need those 2 minutes for the story or whatever it takes, right? I mean,
some shows think they need it, but it's like, no, you don't.
But I will say it does kind of call into question, like, the safety of some characters, like, if they're going to die or not. Because that's true. Like, say, like, on Star Trek, like, okay, look, here's all the main cast members and the main credits, and none of these people are going to die. But if in a show like Arrow, you know, theoretically, these you don't even notice who's in the cast, right? Because they just play them over a scene, like, in the corner, so no one is safe. You know, when they killed Moira Queen, Susanna Thompson in season 2, you're like, oh, whoa, they just killed the main character. And there's like 4 episodes left in the season. Wow. So that is one advantage, I guess. It's not automatic who are the main characters and who aren't. But other than that, I feel like that's really the only advantage of not having an opening credits. Mm-hmm. It's just a real signature of the show. And because of all the things that changed throughout Smallville, that Remy Zero thong, Remy Zero song was always the same. As Pete Ross would say, yeah, Remy Zero! We finally get to the episode.
After all that.
All that. This is all that. You know, Kel is coming to Comicalooza.
That's pretty exciting.
Kel Thompson, or is it Keenan Thompson?
It's Kel Mitchell.
I never knew his last name until just now. I always thought it was Keenan and Kel Thompson.
Nope.
You know, one of the best... We're going to get back on topic, guys, at some point, but just bear with us.
At some point.
If you're listening to us still after the first episode, chances are you're going to put up with what we have to say. We appreciate it. So one of the best things ever to happen in the history of time is when on Jimmy Fallon, they reunited Keenan and Kel for a Good Burger skit, and it was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. You know, they're bringing so many silly things back. I love for them to make a Good Burger 2.
That'd be amazing.
It would be terrible, just like the first one. Yeah. But it would be nostalgic and awesome. Make it direct-to-video. If they make a Pee Wee Herman direct-to-Netflix movie, they can make a Good Burger, too. I mean, throw your boy Kel a bone, Keenan. You're on SNL. Kel's doing Comicpalooza in Houston. Come on.
No, he's also on a Disney Channel show.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, moving on. We start with a dream sequence.
Obviously. Oh, okay. This is another tease of the show. So the second episode, on a show that specifically came out and told us no tights, no flights. Okay, they tease flying in the second episode, like almost right off the bat.
It was a really cool tease, though.
I know it was really cool, but like, come on now.
So we see, we see a point of view shot of flying over some cornfields, and we fly into Lana's room. And then Lana opens her eyes and looks up at the, quote, camera, and it's Clark floating. And she's like, it's all your fault, Clark. And he kind of wakes up, and he's floating over his own bed, and he crashes, and his bed breaks. His bed frame breaks. It's a nice little effect.
But the thing that's disappointing about this is that, like, this never happens again.
Well, yeah.
You would think that this would happen on occasion, that he would, like, float by accident, even if it's just in dreaming. That could have been, like, a nice little running thing that they could have in the show.
Well, that's debatable how often he does and doesn't do it, even if he's conscious of it or not.
What do you mean debatable? It's never mentioned ever again.
I believe in Rosetta, he thinks he flies when he wakes up in, like, the middle of a road. And, of course, Lex finds him.
Yeah, of course.
But I think he thinks he flew over there. He does have some dreams where he's floating, like when he puts the key in the wall. He thinks he's flying in the season finale in the tornado. He leaps tall buildings in a single bound a lot. But you're right. This is true flying. Like, we actually see him flying over to Lana's. And for the second episode, that's really an unfair tease, considering what we get in 10 seasons. But
exactly.
Be that as it may, he wakes up and they go to the farmer's market. There was a real farmer's market going on in Vancouver at the time. So they actually filmed a bunch of wide shots of this farmer's market and then edited him to the episode. You know, and then shot, of course, when, like, Clark and his parents and Whitney are all talking. Those are insert shots.
Yeah, well, this is something that the Kents would do.
Yeah, exactly, because they're farmers. They have to sell. They make money somehow. It's a great thing throughout the whole first season. They're always talking, or second season, too, I guess. They're always talking about, like, oh, well, you know, paying the bills and got to mow the back 40 and, you know, all that good stuff. So it's just real. It really grounded the show. Like, hey, this is it's a real farm. It's a small town in rural America. This is what the heck goes on.
This is what they do.
So I love the subtle use of Clark's powers here. Like, when the show first came out, it was so cool to see this because special effects have finally caught up to Superman's powers to a degree.
Yes.
And that's another reason we didn't see flying and floating lands. It's just too expensive. Okay.
Well, no, I get that, but you know what I do.
It's an unfair tease. Yeah. Where we ended up going. But that's not their fault at the time. They didn't know.
They didn't know.
Remember the Titans quote. Yes. So Clark, I don't even know what the sign said, like fresh vegetables or kids farm or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, so he kind of looks around and he puts the sign up with a nail and he just pushes it in with his thumb. And I like that. Just little subtle uses of his powers that you would use if you were Superman.
Well, yeah, so, like the show at the beginning, you're right. It shows good scope. And scale of his powers and like how powerful he is, that like that simple task is pretty cool to do, like if he just does it with his thumb.
Well,
you know?
I remember there was a moment on Superman the animated series like this once too, like he dropped his pencil under his desk.
Yep.
So he looks around and he like picks the whole desk up and grabs the pencil. Like, come on, Clark, how lazy is that? Just get down and pick up the pencil like a normal person. So we see Bug Boy. He's at the farmer's market as well. Lana is walking around looking at, you know, the wind chime of like butterflies, and he starts like spouting off his bug facts, like those are pickup lines, right?
He's trying to use whatever game he thinks he has.
You know, a chrysalis, and you know, whatever he says.
Like, dude, shut up.
And she says, "Oh, Greg, I didn't recognize you without your glasses." I was like,
Superman reference.
That was a good one. I like that.
That was a good
one. And then Whitney comes over and talks to him. He's like, "Hey, Bug Boy." He's like, if I find out you've been leaving butterflies in my girlfriend's bedroom, you know, we're going to have problems. And at this point, we kind of realize that, you know, Whitney, he's not a bad guy. He's a guy that happens to be dating the most desired girl in town. Yep. So he's got to be protective of her, you know, because all these freaks are literally going to come out of the woodwork after her.
Yep, literally.
So let's talk about stalking for a second, Lance. Something that, you know, I don't have very much experience in.
Yes.
We know people that have done it.
That's true.
Quite ineffectively, I might add. Ineffectively. You know, if Smallville had come out today, it would be more cyber stalking going on. Well, what's better, what's worse, right? Because I feel like that they're each, I mean, obviously they're both bad, but what is more harmful? Actually physically going out there and stalking or cyber stalking?
That's a ridiculous question.
Well, I believe it's a prevalent issue in today's society and should be addressed. Because clearly all these people are stalking this poor girl.
Yes.
And
it continues. Like, it just continues. It
just continues to escalate as the show goes on. Eventually, Lex becomes a stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Greg is going around, he's videotaping Lana and stuff. But into this day and age, you know, people, they take all these pictures of themselves or videos, and they post them on social media, and then, you know, they're out there for people to do what they want. You know, I mean, you joke about, like, ooh, right-click, save as. that for, you know, when you see pictures of whoever doing whatever.
Yes.
I don't know. Like, it's interesting. I believe the rise of social media has influenced actually physically going out there and stalking. And there's been less of that now because you really don't feel the need to. Because, like, what are you going to do? What you're just going to go, like, park in front of somebody's house and wait for them to come out?
Some people still do that. Some people, like, it's like, you know, social media has been an accelerant to that.
Well, social media does make you feel like you might be, you know, closer friends with people than you are.
Yes.
Kind of like how Twitter's like, oh man, Stephen DeMille likes my tweet. Like, yes. Yeah,
that means we're friends now.
Yeah.
I'm going to tweet him all the time. Adam Melliwood, what'd you think of this? Adam Melliwood, what'd you think of this? It's like, he's not answering all
this. It's just such a fine line between, like, being nice, you know, interacting with people, and then, like, hey, bro. Like, just step off. Step off! Step off! Step off! Step off! That's true, because then people, like, feel the need to, like, take the next step, right? So,
yes.
It's weird, but I do actually feel like, even though this is, you know, a sci-fi action-adventure comic book show, I feel like they do broach these issues pretty well, because clearly it's, like, wrong, at least for Greg here. But then, you know, you got Clark, who has a freaking telescope.
Yeah, the lead protagonist.
He's, like, getting all, you know, get a goofy grin on his face when he's looking at his next door neighbor with his telescope. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's just, I thought it was worth bringing up because, you know, all kids in high school, like, man, we didn't have Facebook in high school.
No.
And, I remember when they actually started Facebook for non-college kids. We were probably halfway through college when this started.
About, yeah.
And I remember thinking it was a bad idea.
Yep.
And you know, I still think it's a bad idea.
Agreed.
Because I don't think Southwest Airlines or, you know, Oreos as in any business having a Facebook account, but it's just the changing way of media now. So I mean,
neither do my 6th through 8th grade students.
Yes, exactly. It's just people are making it easy for people to stalk them.
Yeah.
Oh, let's just check in here.
I've seen some bad consequences happen to people as a result of that.
Right, because,
like,
you check in somewhere and then someone's like, "Ooh, here they are," and they go to that. I want to go to there.
Yeah,
they go to that place. I'm like, that's so weird. Oh, hey. I just saw you were going to be here on Facebook. Or, like, someone says they're going to a party. You're like, oh, well, I'm going to go to that party.
Yep.
I mean, I've done that before. But, hey, who might have judged? Selena Kyle might be there. I always think that. Thanks, Batman Returns. I'm trying to think in further episodes if there's people that stalk Lana. Like, there are, but they're not quite as creepy.
They're creepy in high school. Like, it gets really
high school creepiness.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this guy, I mean, Greg Arkin here, I mean, he's got the glasses, he has the acne, you know, I mean, he really is a stereotypical, like, creeper guy.
Yes.
But it's a stereotype for a reason. Like, that's
because it happens.
That's how they look, you know? And he becomes, like, Joe Cool when he gets bit by the bugs. Like, he's, like, wearing a leather jacket, and he's
black
got no
shirt.
Glasses, his hair slicked back. He's, like, the buffalo bat can lift 3 times its weight, and all all his Bugpedia facts. But yeah,
that nobody cares about.
Yeah, exactly. Bottom line, kids, don't stalk people. If you want to date someone, just tell them or send them a Facebook message. So also Whitney, after he talks to Bug Boy over here, he goes over to Clark, and him and Jonathan have kind of a funny exchange, don't they, Lance?
Yeah, Jonathan is just, like, beaming about how great Whitney played at the homecoming game, and then Clark is just like, I don't need to hear this. He's like, I'm going to go do something else.
And then Whitney's like, oh, I'll go help Clark with those boxes.
Like, yep.
What a brown nose, right? So he's like, hey, Kent, you know, last night was just a joke, right? Like, he's trying to play it off because he needs Lana's necklace back.
Uh-huh.
I wonder what they thought when they went to go get Clark. Once again, not established how they resolved the Scarecrow situation.
Yeah.
But, like, oh,
and then
he's not there.
That he was not there. It's like, they're like, oh, crap.
So Whitney tells Clark, you know, that's her favorite necklace. I really need it back. And I love how Clark's just, well, you better go out to that cornfield and find it.
Yep.
So Lex makes an appearance at the farmer's market. Rose's mom just comes in full Lex. Like, he's on his A game right from the jump.
Always.
Because Clark is kind of watching Lana from a distance, as he's prone to do. Mm-hmm. And Lex says, can't knock your taste in women.
Great line. Like, Lex, and also thus starting Lex's streak of having, like, the best one-liners in every single episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny here, down the road, when he actually gets
with
Lana,
right?
it makes it really inappropriate.
But it also makes it really funny right now.
It's true, very true. And then he inquires to Clark, like, hey, what was going on last night? Are you going to tell me? He's like, mm-hmm. It was just a stupid prank. He's like, you were tied to a stake in the middle of a field. Even the Romans saved that for special occasions.
So, great line number two.
Another quotable.
Back to back.
By Lex. So everybody leaves. Farmer's market's over. And Whitney is driving by himself. I don't know how Lana got home. But
she probably rode her horse.
Yeah. And I forgot she was someone to horses until this episode.
She's an equestrian.
Bug Boy jumps into the road and trashes Whitney's car. But before he can finish him off, the Kents, of course, are driving by in their car.
They go to help because that's what they do.
Clark runs towards the truck and saves Whitney. The truck blows up. And, of course, the Kents are like, oh, my God, Clark. Because at this point, once again, they don't know the limits of his powers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, is he okay? Jonathan reaches over to him and he, like, burns his hand touching Clark's shoulder because, you know, it's like he's absorbed all his heat. And that's, man, you got to feel sorry for Whitney. His auto insurance bills are going to be through the roof.
They're going to suck.
Because last night his truck got trashed. And then is this like his parents' truck? Who knows?
Probably. Who knows?
That car is now trashed.
Maybe they're one of those families that just has a plethora of cars.
So Clark, once again, two episodes, two car saves for Clark.
Yep.
So we cut to Lex at the Luther Mansion, and he's just walking along in the hallway, the newly refurbished Luther Mansion. From the pilot to the series proper, they've established the look of Luther Mansion with the windows and the pool table and all, the main room that Lex is always in.
The stained glass in there. Yeah, there.
Now, I don't see the Veritas symbol in the window.
Nope.
It's not about you. But retcon. We'll get to that in season 7. gosh. So, you know, it was really cool, Lex having the kryptonite, and I like where they took it in this episode, but I feel like it was still kind of a missed opportunity. But once again, it's one of those things that's almost too early.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't have Lex Luthor figuring out kryptonite is Clark Kent's weakness in the second episode of Smallville.
Agreed.
But it's established that he has it, and he's kind of looking at it and figuring out what to do with it. So then we cut to Lana, and she's riding a horse, and as she's apparently a horse champion or something.
Yeah, an equestrian champion.
There we go. She's got all these ribbons and all this stuff. And Lex is at her stables. It's actually really funny. Rosenbaum plays it really well here because up to this point, Lex has always really been cool and in control and cocky. And Lana kind of takes him by surprise because she puts him
on his heels.
So he thinks this is the first time he's met Lana, but Lana's like, actually, we've met before. I was in town for a horse thing, whatever, in Metropolis, and your father offered for me and my aunt to stay with at your place, and I went to go use the swimming pool, and you were there skimming dipping with some girl, and he's like, oh, that was you? So it's a really cool moment for Lex. It shows him some vulnerability. But then he, you know, shifts gears into being Clark's Cupid, as he's kind of what he does in the early years of this show. He knows Clark likes Lana, and he thinks Whitney's just a stupid jock. And he says that. He's like, hey, one chucks footballs, the other saves lives.
Uh-huh.
Kind of makes you wonder if you're the right guy.
Lex has known them for like 24 hours.
Yeah, it's like, who are you to come in here? She actually says that. She's like, for someone who just moved here, you sure have a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know, Lana's written pretty well here.
Exactly. Like, you know, you gotta give Lana credit, because this is why, like, I liked her in the first, you know, few seasons, because she handles these very awkward and annoying situations really, really well. Like, this one with Lex here, she handles very, very well, and, like, she's not having any of it. And then later on, we'll talk about it, but she handles that situation really well, too, with Greg.
Right, exactly. And, you know, maybe I was a little unfair to Kristen Kuro, kind of was talking about her in the last episode being miscast. I just, you know, I had a certain memory of the show, but now that we're watching these episodes, I'm like, you know what? There's a reason I liked Lana in the first season. So
yeah.
So then we cut to another great Clark and Lex scene, and it's at the Luther Mansion. Clark is there to deliver the vegetables or some BS reason to be there.
Yeah.
Lex has this whole, like, tabletop Battle of Troy.
Yep.
And Clark's like, yeah, it's a pretty cool gift. And Tom Welling had a... You know, there was an interview way back in the day, and he was talking about the difference between what he had to do and Michael Rosenbaum had to do. And he's like, you know, we have all these great scenes together, and, you know, Michael have just these paragraphs of dialogue talking about, like, this mythology or, you know, this ancient battle. And Clark says,
pretty cool, Lex.
That's all he has to say. So it's the Battle of Troy. Lex explains it was a gift from his father as an education tool, a business strategy.
Yep.
And he's like, take the Battle of Troy. Two men will love the same woman. Kind of like you and the quarterback. And, Lex is playing it, you know, kind of just sarcastic here. But it shows...
But he's speaking the truth.
Yeah, he shows the ideological difference between Clark and Lex. It's like, you know, I kind of have a twisted, sarcastic sense of humor. So I kind of test the waters a little bit whenever I meet new people just to see how far I can take it without offending them. Usually it's not very far. But
I can attest to this.
That's what Lex is doing here, because he's like, you know, if you hadn't pulled him out of that truck, your problems will be solved. And he doesn't say anything, and Clark kind of looks at him, and Lex says...
I'm kidding, of course.
Yeah. Like, you weren't kidding. You were entirely serious. But that just kind of shows where, you know, Luther's mind versus Clark's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he gives him Lana's necklace, but, you know, it's kryptonite, so Clark immediately starts recoiling and not feeling well. Lex says, Clark, you all right? It's like, come on, people, figure it out.
Yep.
But why would they assume?
They have, well, yeah, exactly. They have no reason to.
Yeah, they have no point. Clark Kent must be allergic to these meteor rocks. I mean, that's, no one's going to think that. So Lex is showing Clark the necklace, but it's inside this box. And we don't know
he
what
closes
it's,
it.
What, yeah, he closes it, and Clark says, that's a cool box.
Yep.
Classic Clark-Lex dialogue. He's like, what's it made out of? Which is, you know, Clark being smart. Apparently, it's from the armor of St. George, according to Lex. But apparently, his mom got it for him somewhere, and it's made out of lead. So Clark's like, oh, kryptonite is blocked by lead. So that's really cool that they established that early, that Clark figures out, this is how he figures out lead is protection for kryptonite. That being said, Clark goes home. He's kind of testing his self with the kryptonite, kind of testing his endurance. And I really like how they show the I thought this was so cool when I first saw it. And it was the kryptonite affecting Clark. Like, you see, like, the green ripples in his skin. And,
yeah.
Because this had never really been visualized before.
No.
And I know the producers said, we realized after test audiences with the pilot, people that didn't know Superman mythology, they were like, well, what's going on with Clark? What's wrong with his kryptonite? Like, people didn't understand that that was his weakness. So the reason they did this was to kind of really show and visualize what it's doing to him. Yeah, and I think, you know, Tom Welling plays pain pretty well. Pain is not an easy thing. Like, if you're not careful, it looks like you're constipated or mildly annoyed. But he really shows, like, being hurt very well.
Yeah.
He's reacting to nothing, you know. So, and I just thought it was really cool because this is really the first time I can't remember any visual aids like this in past Superman incarnations.
No, because in past Superman incarnations, when there was kryptonite, he would just, like, keel over and be like, oh!
Yeah, like Gene Hackman just pushes Christopher Reeve into a pool.
Yeah.
Come on, that's
all we know about kryptonite. Is
man
that.
Up. So Clark walks up into his loft, and Lana's there waiting for him. And apparently she's found out that Clark was tied up in a field. Because another thing about Lex's visit is he wanted to plant the seeds to Lana, like, hey, ask your boyfriend what he was doing for the big game.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to flat out, you know, say, hey, guess what? Your boyfriend just beat up Clark and put him in a field.
Exactly.
So good on Lana for figuring stuff out for herself. She came to apologize to Clark, and Clark's like, well, it's very nice, Lana, but you're not the one that should be apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
another cool Superman reference here is Lana comments on Clark's loft. She's like, oh, this is a really cool place. And he says, yeah, my dad built it. He calls it my Fortress of Solitude.
Yep.
Which is a double joke because, you know, of course, in Superman mythology, his dad, Jor-El, his Kryptonian father, builds the Fortress of Solitude. So that's a real cool, you know, little nod. And
nice wordplay, too, with that.
Exactly. And this is, of course, ruined when Jor-El builds in the Fortress of Solitude in season 5.
That's correct.
But anyway, it was cool here. And they have a nice little moment here, Clark and Lana. He has the box with him, but he, like, hides it under a blanket. And he's not sure how to play it. You know, he's like, what do I give it to her now? Like, what do I do? So he does not give her the necklace. But, they have a good conversation about change, actually. And that's a theme. And that's what's great about this episode is there's a theme in this episode.
Yes.
Metamorphosis means change. And it's not just about the freak of the week. But it's about, you know, how Lana and Clark's relationship is changing. Lana has a line that her Aunt Nell tells her about change. Like, sometimes it's beautiful, sometimes it's not. Most of the time it's both. You know, I'm like, that's good stuff. Like, they actually had a story. They had a message they were trying to come across in this episode. And I feel like, you know, that's what the early seasons of Smallville, a lot of the episodes tried to have some kind of actual message in them like this.
They did.
That's the problem with, I think, you know, as much as I love shows like Arrow and The Flash, like, I feel like a lot of them are just going through the motions. Like, here's a comic book story. There's not really a theme. The Flash does have a lot of good themes like that. And early Arrow did.
Early Arrow did.
But now it's just like, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. There's not really an emotional core or a through line to the story.
No.
Like there is here. And I think that was pretty great here because, yes, it's the standard Freak of the Week template.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to say something as well. They're using, like, the powers of the Freak of the Week and then also the circumstances of the characters.
To say something.
Say something, exactly. So after this, Lance, what happens next?
Well, so they go, they're at school, and this is when Greg is, because, you know, at the farmer's market, Greg asked Lana to, like, help him with a research paper.
His lit paper. I'm like, what is this? Like, college? Like, you guys are freshmen in high school.
Exactly.
Right, because this is where she acts Whitney. She's like, where were you before the...
Yeah,
game on Saturday. Where's my necklace? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, she catches Whitney in a lie.
I'm acting like it's annoying, but she's completely in the right here when she's talking to him. She realizes she needs to go talk to Clark. And
that's what it is.
Yeah, you know, maybe this was before. I don't know. You know, we just watched this.
Yeah, I know, right?
Maybe it was before. Maybe this is before the loft scene. Yes, that's what it is. But anyway, why wasn't Clark at school that day? Who knows? But she's going down, like, the stairs or something. She bumps into Greg. He's like, hey, Lana, did you forget? You know, lit paper? I was waiting there for like an hour. She's like, sorry, Greg, I have to go. I have somewhere else to be. He's like, are you blowing me off your boyfriend? She's like, no, actually for Clark. He's like, Clark Kent?
Yeah, I know. But, you know, again, to her credit, she handles this very, very maturely.
She's like, I'm sorry. This is important. I'll talk to you later. I'm like, yeah, this is good. Good for you, Lana. Now hearing that Clark is now competition.
Yes. Greg sneaks into the barn and tries to kill him.
Right, and this is our first look at Clark's super speed, like slow motion. Clark speed, or you want to clark time, quote unquote, if you want to call it that. Basically, the Matrix special effects applied to Superman, because we didn't get to see this in the pilot. Jonathan is working on some kind of farm tools. He always is
some big piece of farm equipment with dangerous things in it.
Yeah, very dangerous, very lethal piece of farm equipment. Greg attacks them, so Jonathan gets pushed over the ledge of the barn, and we see Clark see it from the other side of the barn. So we see everything slow down, and Clark's moving at real speed. It's so cool because we had not seen this visualized as a Superman power yet. And, you know, he doesn't just catch Jonathan and move him out of the way or move the dangerous piece of equipment out of the way. He gets in between Jonathan and the dangerous piece of equipment and therefore breaks it as his strength falls on it. You know, if I were Jonathan, I'd be like, Clark, come on, man. I was fixing that for like 2 hours.
Yep.
And now it's completely broken, like the wood chipper from yesterday. Uh-huh. You know, we're on a budget here, son. But
we're farmers. We don't have any money.
So Greg disappears, and we go to commercial, and we come back, and it's Martha and Jonathan and Clark all talking about Greg. And I love their how they talk to Clark about Greg.
Yeah. Martha's such a mom.
I think it was Greg Ark, and she's like, oh, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. That's exactly how your parents talk to you about your friends, like in middle school and high school. Like, oh, that guy from, what happened to so-and-so from elementary school?
I'm like, out with him anymore.
Mom, I haven't talked to him, and I don't even know where he is. Like, do you think I'm still friends with these people? Like, get with it. But it's just a very parent thing. I really like that.
Yeah.
Clark shares with his parents Chloe's whole theory about the Wall of Weird and how he blames himself for all the death and destruction of Smallville because he came with the meteor shower. Because they're trying to figure out, whoa, I've never seen anyone move like that, and there's all this goo, and like, what could this be? And Clark pretty much assumes that Greg's a meteor freak now.
Yep.
So he meets up with Chloe, and they have a nice little exchange where he's like, hey, Chloe, have you remember Greg Arkin? Have you seen him around? And apparently he wrote for the Torch or something, I guess.
He used to, yeah.
In the 2 months they've been at school?
Apparently. Or maybe when they were in middle school. Who knows?
Who knows? So he gets Chloe in on the conversation. He's initially just going to, like, go about his business and not share anything with her. She's like, I hate it when you do that. He's like, what? And, you know, just completely shut me out. And he's like, you're not outgrowing me as a friend, are you? He's like, Chloe, I can never outgrow you, other than vertically.
Yep.
Which is a great little line, because he's literally a foot and a half taller than her.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chloe does her little research and finds that I applaud the pseudoscience explanation here for Greg being Bug Boy. It makes a lot more sense than the Scarecrow in the previous episode.
Yes.
Because there are, and I don't know if this is true or not, you know, maybe, but there are, Chloe finds some reports of, you know, shaman in fill in the blank foreign country, not America. When they've been stung by a swarm of bees, they take on the characteristic of a bee or something like that. So. Yeah. You know, it's weird as that may sound, I'll buy it. You know, it makes a lot more sense than a lot of the other meteor freaks we'll encounter as the show goes on.
Mm-hmm.
We have Clark, Chloe, and Pete doing a little Scooby-Doo gang dynamic. They go to Greg's house, do some investigation.
They find the dead mom.
Yeah, they find the dead mom. It's just really gross scene. And, you know, I like how they establish that Clark and Greg used to be friends. That actually adds some stakes to this episode.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are learning about this world of Smallville because it's only the second episode. So we're establishing who's friends with who, what characters are what, this kind of thing.
Yeah, and their histories and that type of thing.
Right. Because
they have their own mythology.
Right, and like this kid, like Clark says, yeah, we used to hang out when we were younger, but his parents got divorced and he just never came around much after that. And his mom's kind of a clean freak and didn't like having people over. And it's like, oh, okay, kid stuff.
And he had a sick treehouse, but Clark didn't like it. I was afraid of heights.
I didn't think it was structurally sound.
Which is a very good Clark Kent line.
Exactly. You can tell that Welling has become a better actor just in the time between the pilot and the second episode. So my point there about, you know, the history between Clark and Greg used to be friends and all that, and his parents knowing, Clark's parents knowing that this kid exists, is it's fine here because we're just meeting these characters. But, you know, later on down the road in season 3 and season 4, it's like, oh, so-and-so, yeah, you've been here all along. I'm like, no, that's BS. Like, that's complete retconning. Would it have killed them to have, like, a few recurring characters who became Freaks of the Week instead of one episode at a time?
It wouldn't have.
Well, and this was, Smallville was in a time between episodic and story arc-driven television.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to blame them for not having the foresight to have some kid in season 1 who was going to become a meteor freak in season 3. But yeah. I just wish they could have had just a stable of actors, you know, of even familiar faces that would just appear now and then, and then they could pick from that pool of students to become a Freak of the Week. So, you know, it's a small town, right? So, I mean, how many how many people go to this high school, and how many of them become Freak of the Weeks, and how many of them get murdered, right? So it just no students have been murdered yet, but we are going to keep a Smallville High School death count.
All right.
As the show goes on, that's going to be another category.
Sounds good.
So at this point, Lance, I believe Whitney goes to apologize to Lana at her stables.
Yes.
And then Greg shows up, right?
Yeah, and takes her.
Poor Whitney tries to defend her, and he just gets pushed aside like he's nothing. Poor guy. But in his defense, he just got in a car accident and almost died. So
that's also true.
Can't blame him. And of course, the buffalo wind has three times the strength of its own body weight, or whatever stupid bug fact this guy's spouting off. There was an earlier scene where he's like molting in the shower.
Yeah, and he has like peeling off his skin
with steel wool. It's like so gross. And Clark and Pete and Chloe find that in their house. And the other thing they find is his tapes of Lana.
Oh yeah,
it's like guess you're not the only one with the hots for Lana. I think Pete says
just
that.
Calling them out. Good
See,
job, Pete.
Pete and Lex, quotable on different sides of the spectrum. Yeah. So so they figure out that Greg has probably taken Lana to that sweet treehouse. Clark goes, I guess he goes to the stable to find Lana, but of course she's already been taken.
Yeah, but he finds Whitney.
Whitney's there, and he's like, Greg, he took her. And he's like, oh, he's probably at his treehouse. And he's like, well, I'll drive. And Clark's like, okay. And then he runs off.
Yep.
It's like, but I like how Whitney was about to apologize.
He was trying to apologize, yeah.
And that's a good moment. It shows that he's more than just, like, a jerk jock.
Yeah.
And John Schneider had a quote about this, Clark and Whitney having to work together. He says, quote, they had to get together to save the day, which was great. You know that they didn't want to, but they had to, because they were better people. They rose above their circumstance, joined together, and took care of the problem. And that's great, and that's a great thing about Smallville. Everything's just not two-dimensional. And that's a great thing about Whitney, because he could easily just continue to be the jerk boyfriend character.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But then he would question why Lana was even with him, right?
Yeah, I know. And you know, like, as we surmised, you know, earlier in the episode, he wasn't a bad guy, as we realize.
Right.
He really wasn't.
Right. So Clark, of course, beats him to the treehouse because he has super speed.
Yep.
And
Lana's in, like, some, like, cocoon-like state.
Yeah. Some kind of, like, what Mohinder put people in season 3 of Heroes.
Oh, God.
Oh, what a terrible show. And Clark is going to take Lana out, but then Greg is there. And they have a nice little exchange. He's like, I've changed. And Clark says, I've changed, too. They, you know, they start having a little fight, and they start
old factory or foundry or something.
Yeah. So Greg kind of, it's interesting. You see him, like, jumping around like a bug. It's like, man, how expensive would this? But, hey, good for them for actually showing he moves like a bug. It was pretty well done. So he jumps over this fence and goes to this old foundry that they had established previously. It got a heavy hit from the meteor shower, you know, and it had been abandoned. So Clark goes in there, and of course the kryptonite is weakening him, and Greg starts beating him up. But Clark gets hit across the warehouse, and he lands behind a box of lead.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those moments where if this were truly a comic book, we'd see a thought bubble from Clark, and he's like, it's lined with lead. But he says it out loud, which sounds ridiculous, but you have to communicate that somehow to the audience. So they have their little fight, and it's a pretty decent fight. It's not just like one throw, because Greg has super strength as well.
Uh-huh.
So they can kind of go back and forth a little bit, and this is the early episodes, so this is they still had some budget left before they blew it all.
Before they, like, all the fights became Clark throwing somebody,
throws
the
guy
20
feet, and they get knocked out
and lose their memory,
and he sends him to Belle Reve. You know, we mentioned in the pilot where the Scarecrow like runs into like a fire hydrant and it gets electrocuted, and it's all accidental.
Yeah.
And this is also very similar. So Clark throws Greg across the warehouse. He's trying to get up. He grabs like a chain, and then like this big thing, this
something,
box, some machinery crushes him. And then all these
little bugs come out.
CGI roaches or whatever. But this swarm of,
it was like it was like The Mummy.
Yeah. So, well, yes, that's exactly what it was like. And The Mummy was only 2 years before this.
Yep.
So, my gosh, I'm almost old. 1999. You know they're remaking The Mummy?
No, why?
Yeah, I know, right? The Mummy itself was a remake, right? Why do we need another remake? The Mummy is great, by the way.
I know. It's really good.
The sequel, not so much.
No.
Both sequels, that is. And the spinoffs.
God, they're terrible.
That's a
but discussion. The Mummy itself is really good.
For another time. What happens to Greg here? Theories.
Theories?
Yeah, like what occurs here?
Well, he obviously, rematerializes some kind of way. But he just kind of scatters, like his, just kind of like roaches, like, they don't die, they multiply.
Yeah, I think it was because they didn't want to show, like, obviously, Clark
a
just...
A human death?
Yeah, like, this guy just got squished like a bug, no pun intended. But, Yeah, maybe they just should have shown nothing, but I guess they wanted to imply, yeah, he's taken care of.
Yeah,
but it was just really gross.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Bugs are disgusting. Anyway, he disintegrates into bugs, never to be seen again until season 10.
Yeah, it took him that long to rematerialize.
What other kind of comic book characters have these kind of powers? Like, it's like a Spider-Man would be the obvious one. Isn't there like a DC ripoff of Spider-Man who's a villain, like Black Spider or something? You know what I'm talking about? There, like, there's that episode of Young Justice that starts out with like this Black Spider-Man looking guy web swinging across the city and he gets taken down. And I was like, what is this Spider-Man ripoff? But he was a real DC
I can't remember. There's also like one of the New Gods. I know that is one of those.
Like a bug type.
Power. Yeah.
I guess insect powers. I mean, you look at it, you know, the fly. There you go. Brundlefly, right? That's a perfect example of that. Human bug mutation is always a gross sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
And it's very common.
And it's a fixture in the sci-fi universe, too. I don't know why. But...
yeah. And there was an episode of The X-Files with that came out around the same time. I swear, I should have looked this up before the show. Sorry, guys. But maybe I'll post it on the Twitter and Facebook page later. But yeah, I think Jane Lynch was the mom.
Huh.
In this, but there was an episode where there's a kid who has like bug powers, you know, and he has a crush on a girl and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But the twist is like the mom is the real monster and she had killed the dad in the past. And anyway, it was like literally I saw this within a week of seeing the small episode.
Huh.
I was like, what is this, the same plot? What is this?
Wow.
But I'll look it up and if I am in fact correct, I'll post it on the Facebook and Twitter page. Even if I'm not, I'll look it up and find what it is. But that was in season 8 of The X-Files. That's after David Duchovny had left and the T-1000 had replaced him. Modern-day audiences have known him as the boss from Scorpion.
Yep.
Which, is a scorpion a bug?
It's an arachnid.
Interesting. Anyway, Greg Arkin would know.
He would.
So Whitney, while Clark is battling Bug Boy, Whitney gets to save Lana in a very Snow White-esque moment.
Yep.
Where she's, you know, in the woods asleep and Whitney finds her and saves her. At the end of the episode, Clark has the necklace and it's in the lead box and he's creeping up to Lana's house as a creep. See, so many stalkers in this episode in the Smallville. and he's debating whether or not to give her the necklace. Was his plan always to just leave it and not say, hey, here's the necklace?
I think his plan was to actually give it to her, but I think he just chickened out at the end. He was like, well, I'll just, like, cause I think his plan was to give it to her in person, but then I think he chickened out and was just like, I'll just leave it for her.
Well, do you think he chickened out, or do you think he was being the better man?
A little of both.
A little of both. That's true. That's fair. A little of both. So he's debating. He's sitting there. He's weighing his options if he should leave the necklace or not. And I think he hears Lana like, what did she say? Like, did she say Whitney?
Yeah, I think so.
It's like, what do you want to say with your stupid boyfriend? But so he like super speeds off and he leaves the necklace, and apparently Lana doesn't see him just standing on a bush like 30 feet away. But
nope.
Whatever, because once again, being a creeper, so seeing that Lana is happy and Clark has been the better man or chickened out, whichever interpretation you ascribe to, I think you're right, Lance. I think it's a little bit of both. Pans up to the sky, to the stars, much like the pilot episode, and that's the episode. Under this scene, we get arguably the most famous song used on Smallville. And it's the calling, wherever you will go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hear it, you would know it. It's like, if I could, then I would. Apparently, apparently Creed sings all the songs.
Wherever you will go,
way up high or down low. If I could turn back time. I love it. This is my jam, man. I'm telling you. But this is a great song. And it vocalizes Clark's internal feelings at this moment, you know. So it really ties into what's going on screen.
Because if he could, he would.
Indeed.
Greg, I know what's happened to you.
Well, then you know that I've been freed.
No, you haven't. You're a slave to your instincts.
I have no rules, Clark. I eat what I want. I go where I want. And I take what I want.
You're not taking her.
Well, then try and stop me.
You're not the only one who's changed.
So Metamorphosis, and this will be a running tally we also do with the show, is also a title of a Star Trek episode. It's from the second season of the original series, Metamorphosis.
There you go.
There's a lot of those to come. IMDb gave this episode a 7.7 out of 10, which is lower than the pilot. And, you know, I would disagree with that.
I feel like
this is a better episode than the pilot. Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage summarized it saying, I give the show 5 out of 5 for continuing the momentum of the first episode and living up to a hard-to-follow premiere's That sentence says living up to a hard to follow premiere's quality standard. That seems like bad grammar, but I don't know. Anyway, they liked the episode. I would give this episode an A. I really liked it. This is like maybe one of my favorite episodes of the series because it really, it takes the formula of the Freak of the Week, but like we were talking about earlier, it has a theme that goes throughout the episode.
Yep.
It continues the pilot and really encaps a lot of the things that left hanging there. And, you know, it's just a really good episode. I mean, for a young Superman show, this is a great young Superman adventure.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think this is a little bit better than the pilot. Like, I think I gave the pilot just like a regular B. This would be B plus A minus in my book.
You have to pick one. It can't be both.
Well, let's go A minus.
All right. I like
it. Let's go A minus.
You know, giving characters more depth, you know? Like Whitney and Lana, you know, characters who were a little two-dimensional in the first episode.
Agreed.
And just enriching their relationships and establishing a lot of the dynamics here. The first Clark, Chloe, Pete investigation.
Mm-hmm. The first Scooby adventure.
Yes, the Scooby gang. You get to really see Lex and Clark's dynamic now starting to be friends and him playing matchmaker for Clark and Lana, or at least trying to. And then, you know, the Kent's concern, like, you know, there's a great, another great scene we didn't talk about was between Jonathan and Clark, and Clark confides in him, like, Dad, you know, when I woke up, I was kind of floating.
Yep.
He's like, floating? Once you start breaking the laws of gravity, we're in uncharted territory. So,
yep.
And don't worry, Jonathan, that won't happen again.
Nope.
He said. But yeah, I mean, it really, what could have been just an average episode, and like if this episode was in season 4 or 5, it probably wouldn't been near as good. But why the series is fresh, you know, it really felt fresh.
Yes, agreed. It was a fresh episode.
It was a fresh episode, to quote the WB marketing department. Anyway, another strong episode for the show. And next week we'll be back with Hothead. We'll be joined by Nick Ryan Magdoza. As I said earlier, he's the good friend of mine who's provided us with the artwork for Always Holding the Smallville. That's myself playing Clark Kent, obviously, in front of the Smallville sign.
Yep.
And his classic red and blue jacket, which is yet to make an appearance, which at the time I thought was like, oh man, that's cool. It's like a fake Superman outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, he's going to wear that in every episode now.
Yep.
Oh,
every single one.
I don't like it as much. But that being said, thank you, Nick, for that logo. And he'll join me next week to talk about Hothead. So, Lance, if people want to find you on social media, where should they find you?
They can find me at Sir Lance Laster on Twitter.
And if they want to find me, I'm at More on Zach on Twitter. That's M-O-O-R-E, my last name, O-N-Z-A-C-H. So it makes sense. I'm not a moron. That's my name. For More on Zach, go to my Twitter. There it is. If you want to follow the podcast, we are at Always Mallville. So 1S, because Twitter has a character, has a character limit. So, but, you know, it worked out pretty well. And so that is our name across the internet. On Facebook, Always Mallville. But you can search us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And if you want to send us an email, we are at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. So yeah, we're a new show. We're looking for listenership. Please, if you have friends, family, coworkers, acquaintances, people you don't like but like Superman or Smallville, tell them about the show. Hopefully they'll tune in and like it. You know, we're just trying to grow our audience right now. We're a brand new podcast, and we appreciate any kind of good word you can put out about us. So we're also on iTunes, so leave us a review on that. That would be great too. We need to, you know, the more reviews you get, the higher you get ranked on iTunes, and hopefully Remy Zero won't find us and sue us for using their music. So. Anyway, Lance, thanks again for being my guest on these first two episodes, starting the journey
of
Smallville.
My pleasure.
And Lance, you'll be back again. Lance will probably be my most frequent guest. We've been through Smallville together, so
yep.
We have a lot of shared war stories about the show.
Yep.
So looking forward to hearing your thoughts on episodes moving forward.
I look forward to rewatching, so it's a good deal.
Like I said, next week we'll have Nick Ryan Magdoza on, the provider of our awesome artwork. And remember, until then, always hold on to Smallville. If I could.
life and love might still go on in your heart, in your mind. I'll stay with you.